Okay, let's widen it out. I can't think of a play that's had the impact of Blasted or Shopping and Fucking since New Labour came to power in 1997. Is there a correlation that there hasn't been such a splash in the last 5, 6, 7 years? What do you think, Mark?
I don't know whether it matters. I mean, maybe there hasn't, but I don't know whether that matters. I don't know whether that means that those plays are good plays or better plays than other plays. You know, ultimately, it is a very long game. You know, what are the plays that are going to be revived? Mm. What are the plays that new generations of directors and actors are going to find mean something to them, and then are going to mean something to their audiences? So that initial impact isn't necessarily the same thing. Mm. So I don't know.
What does anyone else think?
So those plays took some. I don't know. You do want to go? Sorry.
The only thing that I'd say is that although I think some of those plays, a lot of those plays, have a real force and quality very well, and they were produced by very driven producers.
That's not true, surely. If Sarah Kane's Blasted, they didn't market it at all.
I think there was some quite canny manipulation going on.
Oh, I really don't think so. There wasn't even.
You're telling me Stephen Daldry doesn't know?
No, but he was a surprise. He was in New York on the Today programme.
He flew in from New York
to be there.
I think there are plays of real quality being written. Mm. I saw a play
now.
Yeah, right now. I think it's kind of ludicrous comparing the quality of different plays. It's like comparing the quality of different apples or something. It's odd. It's pointless. I think I saw Leo Butler's play Lucky Dog last night. I think it's extraordinary.
Yeah, it's a brilliant play. And there are those quiet voices like Robert Holman and stuff that, you know, gradually over the years you just start to listen to more and more. Or Peter Gill's plays, you know, being revived at Sheffield. And there are those very quiet voices that gradually creep up on you over the years, I think, as well. And that's a different type of play.
Yeah. It's difficult. I think it's difficult to be noisy at the moment because...
why is that?
I don't know. You saw Godbothers, didn't you? Right. You know, I mean, you look at that. There's a really violent criticism of Islam in that play. There's clitoridectomy as a plot device. There's, a severe deconstruction of Christianity in Africa and everything, and got nice reviews and a full house, and then it was all over. I was expecting to be killed. I was expecting a fatwa. You can't excite anybody.
Remember you telling me that your dad was very anxious about your safety.
My dad was very, very worried. He said, don't give anybody your address, your home address.
I wonder if I was thinking about this on the way here today, and I remember May the 1st, 1997, as being a genuinely joyful day. It seems deeply ironic now. I mean, look, I remember the kind of sense that, you know, I grew up at a time, 18 years of Tory rule. I never, I was alive in the 70s, but not politically conscious. I never knew anything other than a Tory government. I remember the idea of that being overthrown felt impossible and deeply thrilling, and I think the crushing sense of disappointment that's kind of permeated the culture since then maybe doesn't explain the phenomenon of the writing, but explains the phenomena of the phenomena. People just aren't bothered about how outlandish a play is anymore, because there's a greater sense now, I think, that change is kind of fundamentally redundant. Maybe that's bullshit.
How do you mean that?
I think there was a reaction to what to kind of 1996. There was a sense in 1996 that things needed urgently to be changed, and I think now, given the consequences of that change, the urgency seems slightly pointless.
Mm.
There's a kind of permeating sense of cynicism. You know, you can overthrow a government and it only gets worse.
Mm.
I don't think that affects the quality of the writing. As I said, I think there are fine writers starting their careers now. I think Dennis Kelly's a fascinating writer. I think Lucy Prebble's a fascinating writer. David Dipper shows an awful lot of promise. These are young writers who are writing very, very well. I think they're received in a very different way, because I think the people who receive them perhaps lack an energy or lack the sense of excitement that was around in the mid-90s.
Okay. Let's broaden it out even further then. I mean, I'd just like to hear from all of you what you think that, you know, the strengths of the new writing scene are at the moment. Mark?
Well, firstly, that there's a lot of it. I mean, we kind of take that for granted, but most countries don't have just that, generate that many new plays. They're very surprised when you just say, you know, in any week all over the country, there will be new plays opening. I don't know, it must be like, if you count all the theatres in the country, including fringe theatres, I mean, 30 new plays opening a week or something. I mean, that's, you know, that's extraordinary. And that, I think we just about get the balance right between encouraging, developing, supporting schemes, blah, 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 and production. Whereas if you go to the States, there's a lot of money for trusts and funds and development and encouragement, but very hard to get productions. Yeah. So I think, you know, I think we get those things right. And I think, you know, now we have got a continuum of writers who've sustained careers, which is the other, you know, really tough thing, which we're, you know, Richard and I are just starting to face up to. Are we, you know, are we going to be long distance runners or sprinters? But, you know, we have got, you know, we have got the Michael Frayns and the David Hares and the Carol Churchills and people who've actually managed to sustain that. But we've got young people, you know, 20, 21 coming through. So, I mean, I think those are the strengths.
Is that how you see it as well, Richard?
Yeah, I mean, I, as I said before, I wrote Toast because I wanted to write for the bill, which is a ridiculous way to start in theatre. And then theatre has treated me so incredibly well, because I've found all of the people I meet in theatre. Yeah, I mean, you know, decent, straightforward, and honest. And everybody I've met in TV and film has been virtually the opposite, to be perfectly honest. And I've completely given up on TV and film. You know, you go to Soho House, and everybody there's walking around in black polo neck jumpers, and they're all offering you bottles of wine and say, this script is going to win BAFTAs and stuff. And then you don't hear from them for 6 months, and they're just nutters. I mean, they're just crazy. You go to the bush, you meet this big, fantastic, charismatic, crazy guy called Mike Bradwell, who says, I'll buy you a coffee, and he gives you 3,000 quid. He didn't buy you a coffee, he gives you 3,000 quid. He says, give us the script by November. You know, and you think, this is the way, this is writing. You've got, someone's said, we believe in you. Here's 3,000 quid. Off you go. Go back to Bessnell Green. Knock one out, you know. TV, film, ridiculous. And the other thing about TV and film, it is so controlled and censored, and these, you know, I don't want to be ageist about this, but you get kids straight out of university saying, well, this script is like 27 minutes long and it's got to be 24 minutes long. So I've cut these 3 minutes. What have you cut? You know, and it's just... So theatre, there's no censorship, virtually no censorship. You can say what you like, and the writer is pretty much king. The writer is king, in new writing in theatre.
Or queen.
Or queen, thank you.
Thank you very much.
The writer is king, oblique stroke queen, let's be fair. And if... You know, I came to this job quite late in life, and I didn't come to it as a young person. I gave up a very well-paid job to write. I didn't give up a well-paid job to be kicked around by TV executives. Yeah. I don't mind kicked around by Mike Bradwell, because he's 24 stone, so you get out of the way, don't you? But,
yeah. Yeah, Simon, you are nodding in agreement.
Yeah, because I agree with everything they say.
Yeah, but you write for telly and for film as well.
Right? Do you?
Yeah,
you've done well with your telly. You've done stuff with integrity for television.
I think the key, if you're going to work in TV or film, is to find the people who work in TV or film who used to work in theatre, and they're normally pretty good. So the main person I've done TV work with is Kath Mattock at World TV, who used to work at the Fimbra and used to work at the Gate, I think.
Or the Bush.
Jake Lushington, who I'm writing a film for, is steeped in, you know, is trained at the theatre. And you can very quickly identify the people who weren't. And I think Jake and Kath and the other people I've worked with in film and TV have a sensitivity towards the writer's sensibility that they've learned in theatres.
Mm. But we've talked about, you know, the writer being king or queen in this kind of British playwriting process, and that's obviously great for you guys. But haven't you ever sat in a theatre and thought, oh, a really good script editor could have done something about that? You know, no, come on, be honest. I mean, surely.
Well, you
want to
name names?
No.
I tackle the literary managers.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I tend to get tickets to press night now. Hmm. So if I see a new play, let's say at the Hampstead or something like that, I'll get chatting to the literary manager because I know them, and I'll say something like, yeah, that's fantastic, but scene three is like, come on, it's 20 minutes longer than it should be, surely. And we just have a little banter. But that's, I think, as a writer, you sit in the audience, you're always looking at the writer's contribution to the play, and I don't take much notice of direction for a new play. I don't take much notice of the acting, even, or directing. You just think, well, why has he or she done that? Why is scene three 40 minutes long when it could have been 20 minutes long?
Yeah, well, it might be because nobody told them that it's rubbish.
Well, it might be, but I mean, I suppose in the long run, you're pleased that nobody told them, I suppose, because that's maybe the genre. Yeah. Yeah, I take your point.
Yeah.
I see the point.
A lot of young writers. I mean, don't you intervene? Don't you say, well, I don't think that works, and
I don't think I'd intervene as directly as that.
Mm,
I think my kind of key note whenever I've done developmental work with writers is to establish exactly what it is that they want to say with their plays, and to try and help them say it as clearly as they possibly can, and to work rigorously and with them to see if that clarity can be enhanced at all.
Mm. Well, maybe that's something we could discuss about what writers say. Surely one of the most significant global events of the past few years has been 9/11. I can think of a couple of American playwrights that have responded to it, and Leo Butler in Redundant at the Royal Court mentioned Osama bin Laden.
It was taken out on press night.
It was indeed, which was the 12th of September.
Yeah. Yes.
But I can't think of any British playwrights that are really responding to that at the moment. Can you?
I think the greatest joy of theatre is the playwright isn't a journalist. And actually, for me, the strongest theatrical response to 9/11 was prescient and came before it, which was Carol Churchill's Far Away. I remember reading Carol Churchill's Far Away in April 2000 and loving it, but feeling it had the kind of timbre of absurdism about it. And you read it now and it feels like social realism.
Mm.
I think there are things that journalists can do that playwrights can't, and it's not really necessarily the job of the playwright to respond very quickly and very rapidly to global events.
Mm. Okay, would you agree with that, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, I always feel as though I should have that responsibility as a journalist, but when I try it, it doesn't come out very well. I'm trying to dig away at some kind of something that's of the moment, of the zeitgeist, of the collective unconscious, or whatever it might be, but I don't find that trying to write my play about Guantanamo Bay or anything comes out very, very well. So I think hopefully in some way you are responding to the way the world shifts and changes, and the play that you write this year wouldn't be the same play that you wrote 5 years ago, but I don't think it's the same thing as, you know, I don't think Chekhov's plays are any the lesser because they're not set, you know, in the Russo-Japanese War, or, you know, of
19- yeah, you say that, but
or whatever.
In that public lecture you gave a couple of weeks ago, you mentioned a play called The Cut that you're writing.
Yeah.
And it is about a father who's been imprisoned for atrocities committed under an ancien regime, visited by his son. Isn't that quite kind of obviously and...
Yeah, but I started writing it. Well, I did most of the work on it. I mean, I need to do another draft or so. But, I mean, I started writing it, like, 18 months ago or something. So I don't know how connected it was. And then, you know, you read stuff now and you see, you know, the photos of tortured people and happy troops smiling over tortured bodies and you kind of think, oh, that's kind of tying in with what I'm writing. So... Mm. It was, but it wasn't. I didn't see photos in a newspaper and decide to write a play about it.
I think theatre is also the only thing I'd add to that. I think theatre is notoriously and always has been a very slow art form to respond.
Yeah.
You know, it's the slowest responder of all the art forms. Mm. We just had the Young Writers Festival at the Royal Court. We had 549 scripts submitted, an increase of 200 on the previous festival, and they're just starting to come out. You know, young writers are starting to try to make sense of the shifts that are happening in the wake of 9/11.
Well, why do you think that is? I mean, it happened several years ago now.
I think it took a long time to take a human form, and I think playwrights filter their ideas through the human form.
Mm.
I mean, the images of 9/11 were so deeply televisual, and they were so overwhelming.
Mm.
But it took a long time before they were distilled into behaviour.
Mm.
Yeah, it's ultimately how do things change the way that Simon and I would actually treat each other? How do we actually use words with each other, against each other, for each other?
Mm.
How do we use our bodies? What events would we create between the two of us?
Mm.
And that's very different. I mean, you know, there is fantastic theatre, which is vast, immediate reportage, blah 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 blah. I've tried and I'm just not very good at writing it. But ultimately, you know, I think most writers and most good writers, it's by the time it actually has changed us so fundamentally that we couldn't even share a glass of wine together without mentioning that event, without our language having changed and our bodies having changed and that event having changed.
Mm.
I think it's a good play, I think, is that fundamental.
Mm. What about you, Richard? What do you think of
that? On 9/11, please.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think it's. I think a good writer kind of avoids the main target in a way. I mean, you know, you're setting yourself up to be knocked down, really. And I suppose the first play that came out after 9/11 was The Guys, wasn't it? Which went to Edinburgh. Do you know that one? It was kind of. Did anybody know that one? The Guys. It was. It was at the Edinburgh Festival. The two Hollywood stars played the two main roles.
Oh, yeah. Susan Sarandon.
That's right. Yeah.
And Jim Robbins, I guess, was it?
Yeah, that was right. Yeah, and it sold out, and it was the hot ticket and everything. And it was this kind of eulogy to the New York fireman in the most kind of dripping Hollywood way, really. I only read it. I didn't see it, so I can't really... And I thought, oh, God, this is terrible. Just awful. And you can't, as a writer, I think you have to avoid the main target. And I think Mark's right to talk about Chekhov, because, you know, you read Chekhov with the knowledge that the Russian Revolution and the end of serfdom and stuff is in the background, and that enriches it, and it is very rarely directly referred to. And yeah, I mean, talking personally, I would say God Bother Us was my 9/11 play. Because, and I'm not going to do another one, you know. So, but I will do what I think, again, what Mark and Simon have said is the way that 9/11 has changed the minutiae of the way that people relate to each other. That will infuse all of new writing.
Mm. Well, I hope so. I suppose as a final question, I'll go around again and just ask what you think that. Let's say, advice to young writers, since you're all quite established, if you were in the position of being a tutor to a young writer, and what's the most important thing you could tell them, starting with Richard?
Well, if you're writing for the theatre, I would say the first job is to pay the rent first.
So?
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 What do you mean? So what?
Well, how?
Oh, well, don't rely on theatre to pay the rent. Pay the rent first, remain sane. writing is not a romantic activity, I don't think. It might be within your own soul, but if you start getting solipsistic about it, you're finished, I think, you know. Because all you're going to be doing is ringing up debt collection agencies all day. Mm. Pay the rent first, free your mind for 4 days a week, enjoy yourself.
Simon, your recipe?
Read plays to steal rather than for pleasure. Read as many plays as you can and see what you can steal from them. Go to the theatre as often as you can to get used to how stages work and how actors work and what the what a physical presence on stage looks like and how it operates. Write all the time. This industry is full of people. I mean, not full of people who describe themselves as playwrights and never actually do any writing.
Ooh,
so you just write all the time.
Some of them are critics.
And it's, the industry is also full of actors who aren't getting paid any money and will happily do things for free. So give it to some actors. Try it out. Put it on its feet. Work it. And get it in theatres where people will fall asleep if it's boring, or they'll leave if they find it excruciatingly dull. Because that way, that's how you learn.
Mark, your advice to?
Yeah, I mean, but that's I think that's good. I mean, I kind of decided after all the other options ran out of any possible work in the theatre to be a playwright, and I did decide that if I was going to learn. I shouldn't write anything that wasn't on a stage. So at first I decided just to write 20-minute plays, 10-minute plays, and I just did a little series of kind of... I'd set myself little exercises to write, but I'd always get a couple of friends to put them on. And, you know, often just in a room. I'd just borrow a room from somebody to show them at the end, but then invite 10, 20 people to come and see it. So I never actually wrote any. I never wrote anything unless I could show it to a group of people, because I didn't want to write like drafts and drafts of plays, and start to learn to write something that wasn't for the stage. So you know, the first things that I wrote were for a bare space with with contemporary costumes and one prop. Otherwise we'd have headaches, and it's still there in my plays on the whole. You know, you can pretty much do them on a bare stage with a couple of chairs, and I mean, not Mother Claps Money House, that was something else, but the other plays you can pretty much do with nothing. And that's really because I learnt like that. So yeah, I would say don't ever write anything unless you can put it on.